Welcome to the Church Planting Podcast. It's great to have you with us today. This podcast features inspirational insights of church planting practitioners from across North America, and it's brought to you by the Church Planting Group of the North American Mission Board. We want to invite you to visit our website at www.churchplantingvillage.net to discover a host of world-class resources that have been developed for both church planters and those who lead them. Now get ready, because the conversation is about to begin.
Luke 5, the text says this in verse 27. And after that, Jesus went out and he noticed a tax gatherer named Matthew sitting in his tax office, and he said to him, "Follow me." And he left everything behind and he rose and began to follow him. And later, Matthew gave a huge reception for Jesus in his house, and there was a great crowd of tax gatherers and other sinners who were reclining at the table with them all. Then the Pharisees and their scribes came and began grumbling at his disciples, saying, "Why do you eat and drink with tax gatherers and sinners?" And Jesus answered and said to them, "It is not those who are well who need a physician, but those who are sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance." Now I want to tell you why that particular text has so captured my heart and I think is so appropriate for the gathering that's brought us together here. We don't know much about Matthew. Levi, same guy. We don't know much about him. We don't know how many times he stood on the periphery, as some of you are doing right now, around the outskirts of the room. We don't know how often he stood on the periphery and overheard Jesus talk. I'm of the conviction that Jesus talked enough around where Matthew was that Matthew overheard his message from time to time. But we do know this from this text, that there was an encounter in the tax office where Jesus looked Matthew straight in the eye and he said, "The time to make a decision is now. I'm asking you to come and be a follower of mine. Commit your life to me and all I stand for." And we know that Matthew experienced a transformation of his heart and his faith in that moment. We also know that later on, Matthew threw a party that got a little complicated, but from the text, it seems like it turned out okay. But I've probably read this text 100 times before I let my imagination go free with it one time. And once I did that, the text has had a special meaning for me, and I want to try it out on you to see if it might find a special place in the heart of church entrepreneurs, because I think that's why you came. I kind of view the text this way. Just loosen up your mind a little bit. I view the text as Matthew having this saving encounter with Jesus. And maybe he walked, when it says he left the tax office, maybe he walked right out, closed the door, and followed Jesus right out onto the streets and became a disciple immediately. But then, I mean, we know the encounter was that radical. But then maybe, let's say a week later, use your imagination, a week later Matthew realizes he's got to clean out his office. So he cycles back to his tax gathering office and he's getting his file folders and his pocket computers and his dictaphone. He's getting all his equipment and his pictures. He's cleaning all that stuff out and he's putting it in his briefcase. And all of a sudden, he looks at all the other rows of offices going down that office complex, and he sees, well, there's one of his friends who he's been next to office for 10 years. And here's another guy on the other side, and there's some people in the back room. And, well, there's his secretary, and, well, there's some of the other partners in the firm. And all of a sudden, it strikes Matthew that no one else in this firm has had the kind of life transformation and heart transformation that he's had. And he gets a little sad in his spirit as he's packing up his stuff and walking out of his office for the last time. And he says to himself, "I believe I'd like to do something that would point these colleagues of mine to faith. I believe I'd like to do something that would point them to faith." So maybe as he's walking out and going to his house, he sets his mind to thinking, what might he do? And let's just say that he goes home and he sits in his living room And he breaks out a beverage. Use your imagination what kind it was. And he puts his feet up on the footstool and he says, what can I do to point my friends to faith? Well, option A, what I could do is I could go back and point all of them to the temple in downtown Jerusalem. And if I could invite them there, well, maybe they'd come to faith by hanging out there. He thinks about that a little bit and he goes, bad plan. Knowing my buddies, knowing the kind of guys they are, if they go to downtown Jerusalem and do that religious drill and watch the Pharisees with the scrolls and the tassels and the little bells, if they go through that religious ritual once or twice, they'll be further away from faith than if I never pointed them anywhere at all. So let's not mess with that. Forget option A. I'm not going to invite them to the temple. Option B. He says, maybe I could go back to the firm and build a little platform and stand up and be a preacher in front of all my friends. And he says, but what do I know? I'm a week old in the faith. If they asked me one question, they'd stump me. I better not do that. Option C. I could never go back to that firm, follow Christ myself, let the chips fall where they may, even if they all wind up in hell. It's an option. But you know, Matthew is just saved enough and just sensitive enough, just enough of a friend of these, his colleagues, you know, to say, I don't want to just do nothing. So I think maybe what he did is for the last option, he said, okay, well, let's really let them, you know, ask the Hewlett-Packard question, you know, what if? Maybe Matthew sat there and he said, oh, God, what do I do well? What's one thing that I do well that maybe you could harness and that you could use and we could team up together and that would eventually help point my friends to faith? So he's thinking, I was a good tax gatherer, but I'm done with that now. What else do I do well? He says, well, I have a reputation for throwing great parties. What good is that? Okay, let's go on to something else. No, wait a minute. No, wait. What if I threw one of my great parties? I mean, the kind that all the guys always come to. And what if I invited Jesus and some of his followers? And what if we all came together and we just had this shoulder-rubbing deal happen? And maybe conversations would evolve and the subject would flow around to faith, and maybe some of them would have sparks ignited in them like God ignited in me, and maybe not that night, but maybe later on, you know, that spark would come into full flame and someone would come to full faith in Christ as I have. Maybe I could throw a party with a purpose. So evidently he checked it out with Jesus, because as you know from the text, Jesus and the disciples came willingly. So I think here's what Matthew did. I think he said, okay, let's give it a roll. Let's try it. So he plans the party, and we read from the text here, it's a huge party. And I get the idea from the text that it was even crashed by a few uninvited guests. It was such a huge, good party. Okay? The best parties are always crashed, you know that. So he plans this huge party, and all of his colleagues come. And Jesus and the disciples show. And that night happens, you know, just like Matthew planned and hoped and prayed it would. And then, here's how I envision it in my mind. At one point in the evening, Matthew's standing by the punch bowl. Who knows what's in it? And he's looking over there, and there's James, the Apostle James, you know, with three or four of his colleagues. There's Peter with his office manager. There's Jesus with four or five of his friends. And they're all talking and eating and drinking. And Matthew's just saying, it's working. Just like I hoped and prayed it would, it's working. And out of the mix and out of the conversation and out of what's happening here spiritually, maybe some of these guys will eventually come to faith. And he was saying, and I did it. I took the risk and I invited everybody and I put this together. And I'm telling you, Matthew's feeling good. Then enter the religious heat. The scribes and Pharisees come in. Tassels flowing, bells ringing. They look around the room and surmise in just an instant, this is not the acceptable and appropriate way to do evangelism. Christian cocktail parties are not on the denominational list of accepted approaches to evangelism. This is not the way it's done. So to Matthew's horror, they walk right over to Jesus and they start talking real loud and pointing real big and their veins are popping out and they're sweating a lot. And they're saying, what do you, Jesus Christ, who claims to be the Son of the Most High God, what do you have to do with the likes of the riffraff in this room? That's what they're saying, friends. Why would anybody who loves the Father have anything to do with the pagans gathered in this room? And then Jesus responds, and I'll paraphrase his words. I hope I don't do violence to the text. But you know what I think Jesus said to them in the vernacular? I think when it was all quiet and everybody was listening, you know, now it's E.F. Hutton. Jesus says to the pointing fingers and long noses of these Pharisees, he says, you people don't get it, do you? You don't get it. I mean, with all your knowledge and with all your degrees, with all your skill and with all your scrolls, you don't get it. You don't think the likes of these people matter much to my Father. You don't think the people gathered in this room are potential children in the family of God. But he says, maybe a metaphor would help you. So I'll try to use a metaphor. If some people in this room had a dreaded terminal illness, and if I were the doctor and had the cure, don't you think I ought to be where the sick people are? Don't you think the doctor ought to be up close next to the people who he needs to deliver the cure to? And he says, I'm glad I'm at this party. I'll come to any party like this Matthew throws, because these are the people who need what I came to procure and to provide. And I can imagine, you know, just then, the Pharisees being all embarrassed and storming off and slamming the door. Matthew standing over in the corner, and now his heart is in his feet. And he's saying, this was a lousy idea. I should never have had this party. I shouldn't have taken the risk. I should have just pointed him to the temple. Huh? But then after they're gone, Jesus says, okay, everybody, let's all go back to what we were doing. It's okay. And now the conversations are really intense. I mean, what was that all about? Who are those guys? And now there's really something to talk about. And let's, in my imagination, you know, I say the party goes on till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and I see it ending this way. Everybody finally leaves. There's two guys left, Jesus and Matthew. Matthew decides to walk Jesus out to the curb. As he's walking him out, he says, Jesus, I want to apologize. I mean, I never knew they were going to show up and embarrass you and point the finger and do all that. And Jesus, I just felt like I wanted to crawl in a hole and die when they embarrassed you in front of everybody. I'm so grateful you came, and I didn't think that was going to happen. But I'm sorry, that's all I can say. And here I now picture Jesus turning and putting both his hands on Matthew's shoulders. And he says, Matthew, I'm going to say two things to you. I want you to carry him with you the rest of your life. Here's the first thing, Matthew. Matthew, I love your heart. I love your heart. Nobody told you you had to go back to your office and get all concerned about your buddies. There was nobody who did, like, you know, an evangelism guilt trip thing. There was nobody, you know, you didn't go through a course and get all hepped up about it. just out of the depths of the reality of a grace-changed heart. You went back to your office, and you decided, you know, that you had to try to do something, because your friends mattered to you, and you knew that your friends would matter to me and to the Father. There's a lot of people who follow me, or who say they do, who don't have hearts for their friends. Matthew, you have heart, and I love your heart. But Matthew, I want to say a second thing to you, and I want you to take this to the grave with you. I love your courage. I love your courage. I love the fact that you took the risk, that you went out on a limb, that you innovated, that you rolled the dice, that you wrestled with what would work and what wouldn't work, what would be best for your friends and what would not serve them well. I love the fact that you kind of went out in uncharted waters and you just gave it the best shot you had, Matthew. A lot of people who follow me or who say they do have no guts. No guts. And you have guts, Matthew. And I'll bet you, as Jesus walked off into the darkness, I bet you Matthew was awful glad he threw the party. I'll bet he carried those two remarks to his grave. I'll bet he tried to manage his spiritual life so that he always had a tender heart toward the lost. And I'll bet he threw a dozen parties just like the one listed in Luke 5, or he did even riskier stuff. Because he heard Jesus say, I love your courage, I love your heart, I love your gut.
Thanks so much for choosing to listen to the Church Planting Podcast. You can listen to additional podcasts or sign up to receive the weekly edition by logging on to nam.net/CPG podcast. That URL once again is namb.net/CPG podcast. We also want to remind you to discover thousands of resources that are available to church planters and church planting leaders at our website, www.churchplantingvillage.net. While you're there, sign up to receive our e-magazine, The Planter's Update. It's filled with practical tools that can help you in your planting journey. You can receive it today by logging on to www.churchplantingvillage.net/update. Reaching America, Canada, and beyond, this is your Church Planting Podcast. Thanks again for listening.